Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Quick Hits Lions Club Membership Mixer. The professionals of Odessa Lions Club has scheduled a membership mixer at 5:30 p.m. today at Homemade Wines, 400 North Texas Avenue. Guest speaker will be the mayor, Javier Hovind. Visit tinyurl.com/yzz2knbf. New Year, New Skin. Revive Skin Clinic, 6954 Highway 191, has scheduled a New Year New Skin event from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. today. There will be a celebration of all the new things introduced by Revive this year. Visit tinyurl.com/3bbbhaz7. Cookies in Canvas. Odessa Parks and Recreation has scheduled a Cookies in Canvas event from 6 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. today at the Sherwood Park, 4819 North Everglade Avenue. Admission is $40 and includes painting supplies, cookies, and refreshments. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit tinyurl.com/zsa99ztt. YPO Under 40 Nominations. Young Professionals of Odessa has opened nominations for the 2023 Odessa Under 40 honorees. No self-nominations. Must be under the age of 40. Must live or work in Odessa. Must excel in their respective career. Must serve and give back to the Odessa community. Deadline is February 3rd. Visit tinyurl.com/mpzar8rn. Shamrock Run 5K. The City of Odessa has scheduled a Shamrock 5K run on March 11th at Comanche Trail Park, 900 South County Road West. Registration will start at 9 a.m. and the race will start at 10 a.m. Tickets start at $40. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit tinyurl.com/yant9d2f. Barbecue Masters and Cornhole Bracket Battle. The City of Odessa's Parks and Recreation has scheduled a barbecue cook-off and cornhole tournament on March 18th. Registration is at 8:15 a.m. and the cornhole tournament starts at 9 a.m. Entry to the barbecue cook-off is $150. Entry to the cornhole tournament is $50 and barbecue tasting are $20. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit tinyurl.com/3t6vujxb. Odessa to be site of Civics B. Public, private, charter, and homeschool students will have a chance to participate in the upcoming Civics B to showcase their knowledge and skills. The Odessa Civics B is one of many pilot National Civics B competitions promoted by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce Foundation. The Chamber's website said, at least 1,000 local middle school students will participate in a first-round essay competition. Judges will select 20 writers to go to the final round. A live quiz event testing civics knowledge held at 9:30 a.m. April 15th at UT Permian Basin. Winners will be recognized in their communities and receive prizes. The National Civics Bee is presented by the Odessa Chamber of Commerce with support from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce Foundation. The essay topic is identifying a problem facing your community. How might a citizen solve the problem? The essay should be 500 words, 2 pages, and double-spaced. More information is available on the Odessa Chamber of Commerce website, tinyurl.com/4a3heb7z. Odessa Chamber CEO Renee Earls said they will have a group of judges review the essays and choose 29 students to participate in the B. The 20 students will then participate in a 90-minute Civics B, and the winner will get $500 for first place, second place $250, and third place $125. All of this is funded through the U.S. Chamber. Each finalist receives a certificate. A date for the national competition has not been set yet. The students will get a tablet to answer questions with. The top three students from the local competition will then take part in the state competition. It's a completely new project for us. We were very proud to be selected for this. I think it's something that all of us can benefit from, and I'm excited to see their essays, Earls said. Students may enter at tinyurl.com/2BWBNCPU, and the deadline is February 24th. Earl said the chamber was approached to apply for a grant. One of my colleagues in Brownsville was one of the Texas chambers. In fact, it might have been one of the only Texas chambers that participated last year. I got an email that they were taking applications through the U.S. Chamber for other chambers to participate. She talked about her program, and I just thought, that sounds like a pretty cool project. Then I got a call with the U.S. Chamber and got some more information, Earls said. She filled down an application, and Odessa was selected as one of five chambers in Texas. There are 51 total chambers in the U.S. who are participating. This program through the U.S. Chamber, so it's pretty turnkey for us. It's also intrigued me because I think this is something that adults can certainly benefit from, too. They really don't teach much about civics as part of curriculum anymore, and I told the U.S. Chamber when they were interviewing me for this grant that I was excited to have the students participate. That's wonderful. But I also think as adults, we can learn a lot from this as well. So their parents, I believe, can be a big part of this program too, Earls said. She's hoping that the experience will plant a seed in the students to become part of an elective office, encouraging volunteerism, and showing how issues can get solved as people work together. Earls added that she has sent letters out to principals and superintendents with middle school students to let them know about the Bee. We were very proud to be selected for this, and again, I think it's something that all of us can benefit from. I'm excited to see their essays, Earls said. She added that the topic is very timely. It just goes to show that every community has issues, and it takes a group of people pulling together with ideas to solve issues. Hopefully, we can get some good answers from our middle schoolers to help us solve problems that adults seem to have issues with. Sometimes, they don't see things as obstacles that adults do. I'll be excited to have fresh eyes on this particular topic, and this was again chosen by the U.S. Chamber, not us, Earls said. Watch out, crashes all over Odessa today. So far this morning, there have been roughly 30 crashes on Odessa roads, and the Odessa Police Department is asking everyone to be careful. According to OPD, roads are expected to remain slick, and people should use extreme caution while traveling on Interstate 20, Highway 80, and Highway 191. If you must travel, officials said people should reduce their speed, maintain a safe distance to the vehicle in front of them should they have to stop suddenly. In addition, people should use their headlights, leave early, and be careful while traveling on overpasses and underpasses. They also said people should avoid using cruise control, and if they go into a skid, they should ease off the gas. Some traffic lights aren't working, so if people should encounter them, treat them as a four-way stop. MPD continues search for boy's family. The City of Midland Manager of Communications and Marketing, Carissa Danley, issued an update about the boy Midland Police Department found over the weekend. Danley stated in an email, the boy is with CPS at this time. Danley also stated the City of Midland would like to encourage people to continue to share the information to try and locate the family. Over the weekend, the Midland Police Department issued a Facebook post to help locate the young man's family. The boy is not able to communicate what his name is or where he lives. He was found unattended near Ward Street and Shandon Avenue. He is approximately 13 to 17 years old. The City of Midland is asking the public to please call 432-685-7108 if they have any information that could help them return this young man to his family.
UTPB offering new master's degree by Ruth Campbell. University of Texas Permian Basin is offering two new master's degrees, one in finance and the other in energy business, and both have very high job placement rates. They both got started this fall, Dean of College of Business Steve Beach said. These are very appropriate programs for the region and here, and part of our initiatives on growing graduate enrollments and serving the students out there. There's great demand for people with the skills, and they get in these programs. Overall, we're filling out our energy, relating training in the College of Business, which is very important. We also have an undergraduate program in energy land management. Our changes to our program at the undergraduate level for finance have resulted in great growth there, Beach said. We added that they were able to build these programs based on the fact that their Master's of Business Administration program offered concentration in these areas, also energy business and finance. The transition to full-blown Master's of Science program wasn't difficult. We were already setting the stage for the past, Beach said. Alfred Gormas, Chairman of the Department of Accounting, Finance and Economics, Coordinator of Finance and Energy programs, said it's important that the programs are STEM certified. STEM stands for Science, Technology, Engineering, and Math. Basically, if a program is STEM certified, it allows international students to be able to have much stronger working prospects because it allows students to be able to work with 3 years under OPT, Optional Practice Training, after they graduate compared to 1 year, which makes this program unique, just not for the region, but it makes it unique for the country as well. STEM-certified MS finance programs are very, very rare, and ours is STEM-certified, Gormas said. Beach said the energy business degree is also STEM-certified. Gormas noted that another unique feature is that the program is offered fully online and in person, so students can pick either track. Beach said generally, postgraduate international students can only stay 1 year until they get a sponsor. They automatically get a work permit for 1 year, normally. It doesn't matter if the undergraduate's a master's or a PhD, they automatically get 1 year work permit. Unless the program is STEM certified. If it is, they get 3 years, Gormas said. Between the two programs, there are more than 50 students enrolled, Beach said. The demand is very high out the gate, Gormas said. Beach said a lot of students that come to UTPB to get their bachelor's or master's of business administration want to work in the area. But if they happen to be on a one-year student visa, that's a challenge. We anticipate that we'll be able to grow the numbers of graduates who are interested in staying in the program in the region dramatically with these programs. I think the MS and energy business, a lot of those are going to be folks who are working in the firms who don't have a business undergraduate potentially. A lot of engineers in the area who maybe aren't interested in MBAs for some reason. They want to focus more and more on within the energy business they're working in. And so the program is really picking up for those folks, Beach said. Gormas added that the MBA program is great, but it is, by definition, by its virtue, more generic. It tries to touch on every aspect of the business, but when you get into the MS and energy business, it's more concentrated on the energy side. Like Dr. Beach was saying, if an engineer wants to continue the energy side, it's more attractive for them to get into a master's, specifically engineering business, versus just getting a generic MBA, where they will get bits and pieces of everything that's out there, Gormas said. Both of our MS programs actually still have leveling courses that prepare any student that doesn't have a business background to be successful in the program. In other words, you don't have to be in business major to move into these. You can come from an art background if you want to and still be able to succeed in the programs. Beach said he talks to people about the level of comfort with math and they're going into the master's program. I think that's the main thing I talked about with these people. How comfortable do you feel with it? That's like 90% of the hurdle, Beach said. Gormas said there are also a mismatch between how much math people think about they're going to be forced into versus how much math Phil actually uses. It's quantitative for sure, but I always seem that there's a mismatch when people think something is math-oriented. They automatically are thinking intense math background is required. But the truth of the matter is, most of these programs give you a lot of time to teach you the tools you need from scratch, Gormas said. It's seen many people who don't consider themselves to be math people to be very successful in these programs because we teach them, he added. Beach says students come from all over take the course. Right now, the on-campus finance program has a lot of UTP graduates, some international students, and others who are recent graduates working in the area. Online tends to be primarily across the state, but the MSM Energy Business Program right now is Permian Basin heavy. It's definitely folks right out here who are looking to pick those up, Beach said. Gormis noted that the Master in Energy Business is not offered that often. It's a unique major, Gormis said. A lot of universities offer MBAs and even sometimes concentrate in energy and things like that. But having a full-blown Master in Energy Business is rare, especially being offered for the heart of energy business, being the Permian Basin. That's really rare. Like Dr. Beach was saying, if somebody wants to do anything in energy, it brings them credibility to take the energy-intensive program from where energy reliability comes from. Beach said a finance degree sets people up for many different career paths. I think that's one of the most important things that people need to know about an MS in finance, Beach said. We have graduates who will go on to corporate finance areas within firms where they're interacting with and working on the accounting side. The financial decisions making the side quite a bit. We'll always have graduates go into financial services, things like financial planning, wealth management. They can do their master of finance in finance, Beach said. Out here, we have a lot of folks who graduate with a finance degree who go to work in the energy sector and in banks. So many of our graduates from the finance program here work in the loan department in these banks here and move up into upper management positions. We added that energy business is related to finance, even though they only share a few courses. I think our primary opportunity is for folks who are coming into the technical background working in the industry want to be able to set themselves up to potentially move into managerial roles and into decision-making roles out of the technical training that they have and the technical roles that they already have. You'll see some folks picking up energy business who might get into finance side within energy firms because we're training them on those skill sets, Beach said. If people who want to move up to higher management, a finance background is a highly sought-after qualification. In other words, if you look at Fortune 500 companies and their CEOs, the majority of them have some finance background. Even if their CEO is a marketing firm, it's not just the financial accelerated jobs, but high-level management. Another thing that I've been getting feedback from is a lot of students that do these things, it doesn't matter what team they apply for. Let's say they're applying for working in a market company for specific promotional teams. Every team needs a person that ties to activities on the team and the bottom line. That's why if you look at a job search, a lot of the jobs posted out there, even non-financial ones, jobs will a lot of times refer people with financial backgrounds because they're easier to utilize across the company, rather than just have the unique skill sets or one thing. Bench agreed, noting that his finance person. I think it's a great training for decision makers that ultimately what separates people's career prospects. Are they able to put information together to make good decisions? And that definition is of what finance training is. Whether you're going into healthcare, nonprofit, small business, corporates, or any other type of concern, Beach said business training is helpful because you have to run your operations well. That's why training as a business is so helpful, no matter what business you go into, even a nonprofit, Beach said. When they compiled a new degree proposal for the Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board, Ben said they were supposed to provide input from industry, but they couldn't believe the training are a good idea and going to need it for people with the training. Beach said the Business Advisory Council for the college supported it wholeheartedly. Beach and Gormis said they have about the same number of graduates, undergraduate students in the College of Business. Gormis said it can fluctuate depending on the discipline. We can say right now, particularly with these two specialized business programs and our Master's of Professional Accountancy, there's been a drop-off in enrollment in MBA programs nationwide the last year or so. But we had these programs ready to go at the right time, keeping our enrollment at really strong levels. Gormis noted that the College of Business has increased its numbers. It's quite a unique circumstance to be in, he said. Beach says some universities and colleges have been dramatic enrollment decline. He added that both UTB and OC should be very proud of what they've accomplished. Gormis noted the facility who teaches specialized courses are well positioned. They have industry experience that corresponds to the classes or substantial research in the area they teach. It's not just the program who teaches classes. Our faculty is top-notch in terms of satisfying what the community needs in these disciplines to provide them. Beach added that they get great feedback from employers. Gormis added that their job placement program for a lot of programs, especially in energy or finance, is ridiculously high. We know for sure it's above 90%. When we say 90%, we're talking about the first 6 months of job placements. We're really proud of not only providing the program, but being able to place our students in well-paying jobs, Gormis said. Landgraf, more public education funding coming. Staff writer. As the Texas legislative session kicks off, Republican Brooks Landgraf of Odessa says more funding for public education is an offering, and he will continue to work towards reducing high-stakes testing and eliminating Robin Hood. During the last session, we did increase public school funding by 4.5%, which was on top of a big $9 billion infusion the state made in 2019. Landgraf said in a January 23rd phone interview, "We have to continue to make those investments in public education, as we have also to be strategic about it. I think the best way that we can help Texas schools and Texas school children with state funds is to put that money directly into the classroom in the form of teacher raises so that we can attract and retain the best and brightest teachers in the state. I know that's something I'm looking forward to doing as we iron out the details of the budget," he added. Governor Greg Abbott and Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick have recently asked that they're all in the school vouchers. Landgraf said there'll be a lot of proposals out there on the concept. "Historically, we've been there for years. There are seemingly hundreds of proposals that include some kind of voucher component, and that's quite a bit of talk about school choice. It's hard to identify one particular proposal that everybody's talking about. I think it's important to bear in mind, as we have these conversations, that everybody seems to have a different idea of what they mean by school choice or vouchers, or what type of strings are attached. It's important in the conversation to know exactly what they're talking about," Landgraf said. "I know there have been quite a few bills that have been offered that conflict with one another. Trying to figure out which one, if any, is going to gain momentum in the legislature, I would say, is a guessing game at this point." Property tax cuts are also figuring prominently into the article about the legislature. Landgraf said there's a bit more clarity on that one. "As far as the property tax relief discussion is concerned, there's a provision in the base budget that filed last week in House Bill 1, which is basically the first draft of the state budget. There's a $15 billion property tax cut provision, and a large provision of that is dedicated to the use of state funds to basically purchase an increase in the homestead exemption up to, I believe, $70,000. In other words, that would be property tax revenue that would become off limits for the school district. But that hole would be filled in by the state. So the ISDs, independent school districts, are still being made whole with the funding. But it's designed to reduce the property tax bills of Texas homeowners," Landgraf said. "Retired teachers have been advocating for cost of living adjustments," said Landgraf, said he thinks chances are good it will go through. "The version of House Bill 1 that was filed last week increases funding for the teacher retirement system by 16%. I've long been in favor of cost of living adjustments for retired teachers, and I'm going to continue to advocate for that position. But I do think that we have a unique opportunity under this budget to finally get that meaningful increase," he added. "Teachers don't get a uniform retirement check across the board, and the majority don't get Social Security because of the windfall elimination provisions in federal law," Landgraf said. Landgraf has also been in favor of reducing or eliminating the STAR test. However, the state cannot eliminate standardized testing completely because it could jeopardize about 10% of public education funding. That's the portion that comes to the federal government. And in order to be eligible for those federal funds, we have to have some sort of standardized testing in place that complies with federal law. Currently, the STAR, we are doing more than is required under federal law. And so I want to do is reduce the overtesting, or eliminate the overtesting. I want to do away with the tests that are not required for any reason outside of the test. That's what virtually every other state in the country does, and it seems to work well, at least in terms of reducing the high-stakes nature of the standardized testing. I think a minimum, that's where we need to have here in Texas. I'm working on legislature, whether it's mine or somebody else's, to achieve that," he said. "I think there has been key leadership changes in both the House and the Senate that increases the likelihood that we'll finally be able to do away with the STAR exam. I'm confident about that," Landgraf said. He said it's hard to handicap the chances of eliminating Robin Hood or recapture. "In terms of Robin Hood, I think the larger symptom is we're just relying too much on property taxation. I think the more we pivot away from detrimentally relying on property taxes to fund public education, the better that will be for that flawed policy of Robin Hood recapture. I think if we do increase the amount of state funding again here in 2023, similar to the way we did in 2019, that allows us to actually rely less on Robin Hood. I think that by taking that same approach, we can again reduce the need. That's one of the couple of reasons why ECISD hasn't had to pay recapture because of the increase in state funding," Landgraf said. He noted that STAR can be eliminated, but standardized testing cannot without violation of federal law. Texas is the only state where STAR exam is administered, but there are quite a few states that have the Iowa assessment. I think STAR is the most expensive and less effective standardized test in the country, Landgraf said. The high-stakes nature places a unique amount of stress on teachers, students, parents, administrators, and so that's one. Second is to eliminate creativity within the teacher profession and force teachers to teach to a test that assumes that all children are exactly the same. And then third, when we have the STAR model, it's de-emphasized any opportunity that's not on the test. There are other ways that we could be better preparing students for their future. We don't focus on that because it's not tested. If it's not tested, the state is basically daring school districts to not pay attention to that or to plug resources into other opportunities, Landgraf said. Asked about the button issue like pulling books from libraries, Landgraf said there are going to be 7,000 to 8,000 bills filed. I'm sure every idea under the sun in Texas is going to be at least proposed. I don't know how much momentum there is, but obviously public education issues always get a great deal of attention from members of the legislature and from the public, so I don't expect that 2023 is going to be any exception to that. Landgraf said he's looking forward to supporting efforts and policies that make public school places a place where teachers want to teach and students want to learn. We as a state, and I as the state representative, have a constitutional responsibility to have a strong system of public schools. That's a duty that I seriously, as a lawmaker and as a father and a taxpayer, I want to make sure that we have the best, strongest schools possible because of the future of Texas is worth that investment, he added.
Can I take OTC anti-gas after every meal? Dear Dr. Roach, I toot a lot. I eat healthy veggies, beans, grains, etc., and don't want to give them up. Can I take an anti-gas over-the-counter medicine after every meal? My spouse is anxious for your reply. Truthfully, my dog would appreciate it too. QT. Answer. You can take the over-the-counter medicines, but I don't think they work particularly well. We inevitably pass gas as part of the intestinal bacteria working on undigestible parts of what we eat. The average person passes gas 10 to 20 times a day. Beans, cabbage, onions, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, wheat, and potatoes commonly cause increased gas production. But as you say, these are part of a healthy diet. A food diary combined with keeping track of your gas might help identify the worst foods for you, but your spouse and dog should know this is also part of being human.
This is the Dear Abby column. Dysfunctional family labels stable brother selfish. Dear Abby, my two siblings and I were raised by an abusive alcoholic father. Predictably, it has adversely affected our mental health. One sibling struggles with alcoholism and substance abuse. The other has a personality disorder and cannot maintain stable relationships. I cope with comparatively fewer severe issues, but I still must work hard to sustain a marriage and my career and raise healthy children. It isn't easy. My siblings' issues have disrupted my emotional health and family life, which is why I keep them at a distance. Lately, they have expressed feeling abandoned. Other family members call me selfish and say I'm obligated to help them because I'm the successful one. I do feel some guilt for not helping more, as we all survived the same toxic childhood. Yet my emotional bandwidth is limited. Frankly, people with alcoholism and personality disorders are hard to be around, even if they are family. Is it selfish to prioritize my well-being by maintaining distance from my siblings? Signed, their brother. Dear brother, your first priority must be your emotional health. Next should be the well-being of your spouse and children, and the career that enables you to provide for them. If maintaining some distance from these siblings is selfish, then call it enlightened selfishness. Help them to the extent you can, but do not allow yourself to be emotionally arm-twisted by other relatives who remain on the sidelines. Dear Abby, I've lived in my apartment for almost 10 years and had the same downstairs neighbor since I moved in. About 3 years ago, I began noticing an odor coming from her apartment. It's hard to describe other than the worst body odor imaginable. It's so bad that I can't open my sliding door or windows in the summer because the smell drifts into my home. She is not the type of person I can approach about this, no matter how gently I word it. I'm to the point where I feel I should file a complaint with management. It could be a hoarding situation, which could lead to health issues or pests. There are only 4 units in my building, and I know my other 2 neighbors would never complain. It would be obvious it was me, which would make for a very uncomfortable living situation. So far, no one else I know has had advice, so I am desperate for any suggestions. Signed, Disgusted in Oregon. Dear Disgusted, have you spoken to your other neighbors about this? Have they noticed the odor too? If any of them tells you yes, then absolutely discuss what has been happening and for how long with the building management company. There may indeed be health and safety issues involved. Could she have a dead animal in there? Please do not remain silent. For everyone's sake, this should be checked out. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.